You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we are back with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I'm your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and we return here. It is Thursday, which means it is Crossover Thursday, a divisional round Crossover Thursday. In our second and third segments here today, we will be talking with Joe Marino of Locked On Bills as Baltimore prepares to take on Buffalo in the divisional round. But here in this first segment, we're going to be doing another bit of a Ravens news notes and quotes segment. We did get a couple of late mailbag questions from Charles Davis, so we'll be answering those as well. But we're going to focus on the injury reports for both Baltimore and Buffalo first, and then get into those questions from Charles Davis. And then again, in the second and third segments, we'll be talking to Joe Marino of Locked On Bills. So let's just jump right in here without any further ado. But before we do that, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere there's a podcast. We're there waiting Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. Eastern Time. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Ravens and my personal account at ChaosTrekker34 for any Ravens news, analysis, updates, historical perspectives, and more. So, with all that being said, we are going to jump right in here and let's start off with the Ravens injury report. Now, yesterday, only three Ravens players were on the injury report. It seemed like Baltimore was getting healthy, and they really are compared to where they were earlier in the season, but two more Ravens joined the injury report yesterday. However, these were not injury-related appearances on the injury report. Both Calais Campbell and Mark Ingram did not practice with non-injury-related issues, which means these were just veteran days. Calais Campbell seems like he is pretty much back to as close to 100% as he can be at this point in the season. Mark Ingram, same thing. So those two, just veteran days, but the Ravens had the same three players from Tuesday on Wednesday's injury report with the same practice participation designations and the same injuries. So that means Matthew Judon with his illness did not participate, Marcus Peters with his back injury did not participate, and DJ Fluker with his knee injury was a limited participant. So let's get the limited participation out of the way. DJ Fluker, limited participation with his knee injury. I think he's 100% good to go. He's able to participate in some practice. He should be fine. I don't have any issues with DJ Fluker's injury or any concerns with it. He should be good to go. The two that are starting to get a bit concerning here are Matthew Judon and Marcus Peters. Both did not participate with their respective injuries. Matthew Judon with the illness and Marcus Peters with the back injury. It's not great. It's not wonderful. I do expect both to play, but missing valuable practice time during the week, during a big week here in the divisional round, it's big. And Marcus Peters, again, I think he got injured in that game against Tennessee, but he was out there. He made the game-sealing interception. So for Marcus Peters and Matthew Judon, I'd like to see a limited participation out of both of them today. On Friday, there probably won't be an injury report. They might do a small walkthrough, but they're probably traveling on Friday and then getting to Buffalo then. And then maybe Saturday morning before the game, they'll do a brief walkthrough, see how everybody's feeling and whatnot. So today's injury report for Baltimore is big in terms of determining the two statuses of Matthew Judon and Marcus Peters. With Matthew Judon, the illness, again, I just think it's a precautionary thing. Not feeling well, don't push him a ton. For Marcus Peters, I mean, same thing, just precautionary. Don't make something worse than it already is. If it even is just a minor thing, I think Baltimore's smart there. But again, I'd like to see a limited participation from both of those guys in order to feel a bit better about their chances for Saturday. For the Bills and their injury report, it's pretty much the same as yesterday for Wednesday. Tyler Bass with a hand injury. He was a full participant. He was not on the injury report on Tuesday. Cole Beasley with a knee. He was limited again. Stephon Diggs, oblique, limited again. Jermaine Edmonds, hamstring, limited again. Jake Fromm, not injury related, limited again. Daryl Johnston, knee injury. He did not participate for the second straight day. Ed Oliver, ankle, limited again. Justin Zimmer, groin, limited again. There's a lot of limited agains here. In the Bills, it seems like most of the guys who are limited participants in practice should be good to go on Saturday. I mean, Cole Beasley, again, pretty much playing on one leg right now. He is toughing it out. He is a warrior, so good for him. And then the other guys, they should all be good to go. So again, two teams here that are most likely going to be pretty much at full strength heading into Saturday, which is a good sign. You want to go through the best competition to get to the Super Bowl. They play a really good Tennessee team. Now they're playing a really good Buffalo team. It's either going to be the Browns or the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game if Baltimore makes it there. So, with the Bills having most of their lineup, with the Ravens having most of their lineup, it should be a good game on Saturday. But let's now get into some questions from Charles Davis, who asked us a couple of really nice questions here about some key players on the Ravens, both on offense and on defense. So let's start off here with his first question. How clutch was Pernell McPhee in that wild card game? Charles, Pernell McPhee might have been the best defensive player on the field for Baltimore, and there were a lot of great defensive players on the field. Calais Campbell had a really nice game. Deshaun Elliott, I was pleased with. Derek Wolfe, Matthew Judon, Jihad Ward. There were a lot of guys, but Pernell McPhee was somebody who just looked like he belonged on that field, really looked like he belonged in a Baltimore Ravens uniform. He tied the lead in tackles on Baltimore's defense with 6. He tied with Derek Wolfe in that regard. But he was somebody who was just wreaking havoc in the run game. He was shedding blocks, forcing down on the edge, making sure Derrick Henry had nowhere to run. He was a key catalyst on Derek Wolfe's sack, the only sack of the game for the Ravens. He was pretty much the reason Derek Wolfe got free. He took up multiple defenders, pulled them into him, and Wolfe was able to shake free and get the sack. McPhee was just literally all over the field, and it wasn't even like he played that many snaps. I think he played 20 total snaps, or at least around 20 total snaps. It felt like he played the whole game just based off of how well he was playing. He was pretty much making a play on every single snap he was in. You know, if you're going technically a little under one-third of the snaps he was making a play on that he was in. But it's unbelievable because McPhee is somebody who Baltimore has trusted in this role. He's a veteran. He's been in the playoffs before. He was on that Super Bowl winning team in 2012-2013. He knows what it takes. He knows the intensity. There's a reason the Ravens put him in the inside of the huddle when they're breaking down and when they're doing their pregame speeches. There's a reason that he's in the middle there pumping this team up. He plays with intensity. He plays with fire. He's a smart football player. He's physical. He's really sound in both run defense and pass rushing. He's just an all-around great player. Now, obviously, the 20 snaps, he's not going to play a full complement of snaps for you, but in situations, he is, I think, someone who the Ravens really trust and really like in those certain situations. So moving forward, with the Ravens having Matthew Judon and Yannick Ngakoue and Jihad Ward, Jalen Ferguson, you know, there are a lot of guys on the roster, and even including Tyus Bowser, there are guys who can make plays. But McPhee is somebody who has definitely earned a few more snaps. He can handle those snaps. And against Tennessee, he was just a havoc wreaker. He was everywhere. And honestly, I'd probably give him the MVP on defense if we're being completely honest here. That's just how good he was on Sunday. The second question here from Charles, how valuable was giving Hollywood more touches in that game? The orbit screens, short yard throws, so clutch. Charles, you hit it right on the head. It really was clutch. Playoff Hollywood Brown is a real thing. Showed up last year against Tennessee, showed up last Sunday against Tennessee. He is somebody who seems to show up in the big moments when it matters. Drops 3 balls against Cleveland in that Week 14 game. Comes back and catches that touchdown to give Baltimore the lead on that 4th and 5, I believe it was. It just, you know, he is somebody who shows up in the big moments in the playoffs, and that's what you want. But getting him involved early was so key for his confidence. And it wasn't just sending him on fly routes or sending him on goes and, you know, targeting him deep down the field. They were getting him involved in the short passing game, in the intermediate passing game. And then what we saw out of him was the yards after the catch. He was shaking guys, making guys miss, being a bit physical. And, you know, he wasn't overdoing it. He wasn't, you know, trying to body up a big safety like Kevin Byard or Malcolm Butler. But he was going and trying to get extra yards where usually, you know, over the course of the first 2 years of his career, we've seen him go down instead of trying to create extra yards. And yes, he's being careful with his body, but Marquise Brown showed up. He was easily the Ravens' top receiver in this one, hauling in 7 passes for 109 yards. He showed up. He gave Lamar Jackson someone he could trust. And that relationship between Marquise Brown and Lamar Jackson on the field, it seemed to have been kind of broken a bit where Lamar Jackson might not have trusted Marquise Brown. Marquise Brown, his confidence was a bit shot. But now we're seeing the Ravens got back to that combination, the Lamar Jackson to Marquise Brown combination. And now here it is. They got it cooking late in the regular season, and now it's working in the playoffs. So hopefully he can show up against a Buffalo secondary that is a lot better than Tennessee's secondary. So we'll see what ends up happening there. But getting Marquise Brown involved early and often was key in this game against Tennessee. We're going to head into our first break here, but when we return, we'll be talking with Joe Marino of Locked On Bills for our divisional round crossover Thursday, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. When it comes to getting or staying in shape, nothing feels as good as that feeling of accomplishment, of hitting your fitness goals and feeling great about yourself. Echelon can get you there. Echelon offers the next generation of connected fitness bikes, fitness mirrors, rowing machines, and their Echelon Stride Smart Treadmill. No matter what your favorite fitness activity, Echelon gives you a fun and challenging workout from the comfort of your home. The EX7S is Echelon's latest state-of-the-art innovation that takes cycling to the next level. The EX7S connected bike is built with performance, flexibility, and durability in mind. The EX7S is the bike for competitors at heart. Go to echelonfit.com/lockedon. That's echelonfit.com/lockedon.
Joe Marino of Locked On Bills, joined now by Kevin Ostreicher, the host of the Locked On Ravens podcast, to help us get ready for Bills Ravens on Saturday night. It's high stakes football. The winner advances to the AFC Championship game. And Kevin, I think we have to start this conversation around the quarterbacks. We got two from the 2018 NFL draft, Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. And since it's my turn to ask you questions, I want to ask you about Lamar Jackson coming off the unanimous MVP honors last season into this year. What have you learned about Lamar Jackson? How has his game evolved from last year to this year?
Yeah, Joe, people were expecting, I think, such a big year three leap for Lamar Jackson that most would probably consider what he did in 2020 kind of a disappointing season. I mean, Lamar Jackson coming off a year where he gets 40 total touchdowns, more than 40 total touchdowns. What I've learned about Lamar Jackson this season is, regardless of all the hate and the narratives and this, that, and the other, Lamar Jackson is a fighter. Lamar Jackson does not quit. And Lamar Jackson is still evolving. Lamar Jackson just turned 24 years old, literally on January 7th. And you mentioned, and I'll take the whole stat a bit further, the Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson 2018 quarterback class. Three of the final four quarterbacks in the AFC are from that 2018 quarterback class. First round, Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. These guys are all improving. They're all so young. Lamar Jackson this season, 242 completions out of 376 attempts, 2,757 yards passing. He had 26 touchdowns passing, 9 interceptions. And then he also was a threat with his legs, his second consecutive 1,000 rushing yard season, 1,005 yards on 159 attempts. That's 6.3 yards per carry. He led the whole league, quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, whoever, in yards per carry. He had 7 touchdowns on the ground. Lamar Jackson, people were expecting him to improve on his deep ball accuracy, to improve on his throws outside the numbers. Lamar Jackson loves to throw in the middle of the field. Mark Andrews, his favorite target, operates over the middle of the field. And it seemed like earlier in the season, week 3 against Kansas City and a bunch of other games before the 5-0 stretch, the Ravens, I think, were kind of forcing it on offense. Lamar Jackson, even Greg Roman, I think they were trying to force the ball down the field a bit too much. They were getting away from who they are, which is a running football team. The gears turn on this offense with Lamar Jackson and with their running game. Their run offense helps their pass offense, and their pass offense helps their run offense. Lamar Jackson is never going to be a 5,000-yard passer. I mean, he might be one day, but with the way the Ravens offense is right now, he's not going to be that, and that he doesn't need to be. Lamar Jackson, over the course of the last 5 weeks of the 2020 season, has greatly improved. And I think that he just does not let the narratives and the hate and the doubt get to him. He picks up his first playoff win on Sunday against Tennessee, and he's only growing from there.
You mentioned that this is a running football team, so let's talk about that real quick. Over 3,000 rushing yards during the season, 5.5 yards per carry, 24 rushing touchdowns. You mentioned it, Lamar went over 1,000 yards for the second consecutive season. He averaged over 6 yards per carry. The rookie out of Ohio State, J.K. Dobbins, he came on strong, over 800 yards rushing. He averaged 6 yards per carry. Of course, Gus Edwards still in the building. He had over 700 yards rushing and 5 yards per carry, over 5 yards per carry. Why is this group so dominant, and how do you slow it down?
Yeah, Joe, this is a dominant group, and they have so many people that can beat you on the ground. You mentioned J.K. Dobbins. You mentioned Gus Edwards. Mark Ingram is probably not going to be active in this game. He has not been active for most of Baltimore's games throughout the course of the end of the season because guys like Dobbins and Edwards are just more effective than Ingram. And it's sad because Ingram was a guy who really helped Baltimore's offense in 2019. He scored 15 total touchdowns. But a guy who's averaging 4.2 yards per carry, you mentioned 4.2 yards compared to 6.3 for Jackson, 6 for Dobbins, 5 for Edwards. He just was not getting it done. Baltimore needed the roster space elsewhere. But in terms of why their running game is so successful, there are so many different concepts that Baltimore runs. Last season, we saw a ton of RPO with Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram, Gus Edwards. They've moved away from that a bit. They've started to use a bunch of different pull plays, a bunch of different counters, and it's been working for them. They use a bunch of speed options as well. The Ravens offense with Lamar Jackson, you have to account for his legs. And, you know, he is a good passing quarterback. I think that kind of goes unnoticed by a lot of people. But the Ravens, this all starts up front with their offensive line. The Ravens lose Ronnie Stanley against the Pittsburgh Steelers in their first game they play in the middle of the season. The next week, I believe they go and they lose Nick Boyle, who most believe is one of the best blocking tight ends, if not the best blocking tight end in the entire NFL. They've had to shuffle and shuffle and shuffle that offensive line. They've had three different centers, a bunch of different right tackles. I believe it was three or four different right guards. The only player on Baltimore's offensive line who was still in the position they were at in week one and who was still the starter on that line is Bradley Bozeman, the left guard. Orlando Brown moves from right tackle to left tackle. They've shuffled their offensive line so many times, I honestly cannot keep count. And it all starts up front because regardless of how good your quarterback is, how good your running back is, if there are two defenders in the backfield before the quarterback and the running back can finish their exchange, it's most likely going for negative yards. So with Baltimore, how you can slow it down is just gap penetration, disciplined football. The edge guys have to keep with their responsibilities. Don't bite on fakes. With Lamar Jackson, he can pull that ball in when they do run RPOs and run around the outside. If that edge guy bites on the inside run and collapses and loses that edge, Lamar Jackson will just run around and his speed gets him a bunch of yards. If that edge guy follows Lamar Jackson and Lamar Jackson decides to hand it to J.K. Dobbins or Gus Edwards up the middle, it's something where the defenders have to be able to have great gap discipline, hold the edge and keep responsibility. And it's tough because it looks like Lamar Jackson is doing five different things at the exact same time when in reality, he's only doing one. So if a defense can stay disciplined, it helps tremendously in stopping the Ravens rushing offense.
It's pretty impressive when you think about how the depth of this offensive line has been stressed. You mentioned no Ronnie Stanley, who's an elite left tackle, and not to mention that Marshall Yanda is no longer in the building and they're still able to maintain this dominant rushing attack. Let's talk about this season, the journey of this season for a quick second. The Ravens, they started 5-1, good start to the season. Then they had a lull there. They lost 4 out of 5, and then they closed the season with 5 consecutive wins. And of course, a sixth straight win, if you include that win last week over Tennessee. So it's a hot football team, started hot, had a lull in the middle, finished hot. Undoubtedly, that hot streak at the end, it included some softer wins. You think about Dallas, Jacksonville, Cincinnati, and the Giants. And so take us through this. Like, what were the biggest differences throughout the course of the season that resulted in that strong start, the lull, and then obviously the strong finish?
Joe, it's certainly been a journey for Baltimore throughout this 2020 season. And the start week one, Baltimore is ridiculous in week one. I know Buffalo was a victim of that a few years ago. They are an unbelievable week one team. I think they've scored over 40 points in like three consecutive week one games, or I think 38 points in three consecutive week one games dating back to a couple of years ago. The Ravens just had confidence coming into the season. They came off of that year where they did go 14-2, but then they lose in the divisional round to Tennessee, a kind of disappointing ending, actually a really disappointing ending. So Baltimore, they have that fire. They have that just chip on their shoulder. And then the injuries start to happen kind of, and every NFL team deals with injuries. It's not necessarily an excuse, but Tavon Young, the best slot corner in the NFL, or at least one of them, goes down with an injury, his third season-ending injury in 5 years. Kansas City comes to town and just dismantles Baltimore. Baltimore's defense, whenever they play Kansas City, it's just not a good matchup for the Kansas City offense. Don Martindale loves to blitz, and Patrick Mahomes eats up the blitz. So it's kind of not a great matchup for them. But then there's COVID that happens in the middle of the year. Baltimore on top of COVID, is starting to go through some subpar play. I mentioned Baltimore's offense is forcing it down the field. Calais Campbell goes down with an injury, misses a couple weeks. Brandon Williams goes down with an injury and is also kind of going on the COVID list. Where this season turned around for Baltimore, though, I think it was what people call the COVID game against the Pittsburgh Steelers on Wednesday afternoon football, the Thanksgiving game that was postponed. And this was a team that really nobody, literally nobody gave a shot. You know, they were playing down almost 20 players. Robert Griffin III comes in. He gets injured. Trace McSorley has to come in. The Ravens played the Pittsburgh Steelers really tough. And the next week when Pittsburgh loses to Washington, Washington and Chase Young said, hey, last week Baltimore exposed some things. That's where Baltimore, I think, gained their confidence. And then they go on that 5-0 stretch. And that's where Baltimore figures out their offensive line. It's where Lamar Jackson gets his confidence back. It's where the Ravens figure out how their rushing attack truly works. It's kind of weird to say the Ravens, who were a historic 2019 offense, they came into the 2020 season not knowing what their identity was, whether they were a running or passing offense. And I think, in my opinion, it's pretty obvious what they should have done. But earlier in the year, they just didn't do it. So Baltimore gets the momentum. They get hot late in the season. They carry that over to Tennessee and beat the Titans with a burning passion. And I think now it's all coming together for this Ravens team at just the right time.
Another year, another dominant defense in Baltimore. The Ravens have the number two scoring defense in the NFL, number seven when it comes to yards allowed per game. What makes this unit so good? And if there are ever times when it struggles a bit, what do you think some of the contributing factors to that are?
Yeah, this defense is certainly a great defensive unit. A key piece to the Ravens' success, especially when you look to Tennessee, they hold Derrick Henry to 18 carries for 40 yards, 2.2 yards on the ground for a 2,000-yard rusher. That's pretty impressive. The Ravens, as I mentioned earlier, they're getting healthy on the defensive side of the ball. Jimmy Smith, who's a very injury-prone corner, but gives the Ravens another dynamic on the defensive side of the ball, comes back for this game. He missed, I think, the previous month with an injury. Marcus Peters is banged up for the entire year. They let him sit out a couple weeks on that back half of the schedule. He comes back and is now playing at pretty much 100%, or at least as close to it as he can get at this point of the season. Calais Campbell, I mentioned, comes back. Brandon Williams comes back. The Ravens defense, they built their defense to be able to hold the offense's lead. And with Lamar Jackson, with that offense, you know, they're probably going to be putting up a lot of points. But on the defensive side of the football, Baltimore has that elite secondary with Marlon Humphrey. They have Marcus Peters, as I mentioned, Jimmy Smith, as I mentioned. Anthony Averett is another corner who's their fourth corner on their depth chart, who has played exceptionally well this season when guys like Smith and Peters have had to miss time due to injury. They drafted linebacker Patrick Queen in the first round, paired him with LJ Fort, kind of an afterthought a couple years ago, coming from the Steelers and then the Eagles, but he has turned into a great linebacker for Baltimore. They build the defensive line with Campbell and Derek Wolfe, who has been one of the best run defenders in the entire NFL. They traded for Yannick Ngakoue, who has been a phenomenal addition, despite the stats not necessarily being as impressive as I think a lot of people would have maybe liked. He gets pressure on opposing quarterbacks and forces them into some bad decisions. So they are stacked up and down the defense, but sometimes they can struggle in getting pressure on quarterbacks without blitzing. And that's why I think Don Martindale has had to resort to some of those blitz heavy packages, because four-man fronts or whatever it may be, the Ravens sometimes, whether they rush four, they rush five, it sometimes is a struggle for them to get pressure. So with the Ravens, if they can't get pressure on Josh Allen, if they just let him sit back in the pocket, no matter how good your secondary is, if you leave a quarterback back in that pocket for 3, 4, 5 seconds, there's most likely a completion coming. So they have to be able to get pressure.
Tanks up front, speed on the second level, ball hawks and physical defensive backs. I mean, this is a really, really good roster. Let's kind of close here by lasering in on the matchup between the Bills and Ravens. What immediately comes to mind for you when you consider advantages that Baltimore has in this game, and then maybe some areas of concern when it comes to the Ravens matching up with the Bills?
Yeah, Joe, I think a key matchup for this is definitely the Ravens defense against the Bills rushing attack. And I know the Bills rushing attack hasn't been particularly impressive this season. Josh Allen is certainly a threat with his legs. Zach Moss is going to miss this game. We'll talk about that a little later. But for the Ravens, if they can make this Bills offense one-dimensional, and I'm not saying force Josh Allen to throw, he can't throw the football. He can certainly throw the football. But if you take away a rushing attack from an offense, from any offense, it makes it very hard on that offense to go out and, I think, execute a game plan, just because the defense doesn't have to necessarily sell out for the run. They can focus on getting into coverage. And I think that's a key point in this. I think another key point this game is going to be one up in the trenches for this Baltimore offense. The Ravens offensive line, as I mentioned, has really had resounding success over these last 5-6 weeks going up against the Bills defensive line. You know, Ed Oliver is in there and they have a couple of other guys. They have to be able to open up holes on the first level and get to the second level in order to give Lamar Jackson, give J.K. Dobbins, give Gus Edwards holes to be able to run through. Because if you're letting linebackers scrape, you're letting linebackers get downfield and get downhill, it's not going to be good for Baltimore, because guys like Tremaine Edmonds and a bunch of others can go in. And even the safeties, the Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde duo, which is arguably the best safety tandem in the entire league, very physical duo. They have to be able to get to the second level, seal off edges, and make sure that those guys have room to run. We're going to head into our final break now, and when we return, we'll be continuing our divisional crossover Thursday with Joe Marino, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all the parts you need into a traditional chain storefront. Why endure from pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing only the brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right locked on in there, how'd you hear about us box, so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. The NFL regular season is finished and the playoffs have begun. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. We return here with another segment of a divisional round crossover Thursday. Joe Marino of Locked On Bills here with me, Kevin Ostreicher of Locked On Ravens. And Joe, you started off with the quarterback matchup, so I think I'll do the same thing. Josh Allen, arguably one of the most improved players in the NFL, arguably up for MVP this season. I think it's a two-man race between him and Aaron Rodgers. You have to look at how Josh Allen has evolved here, and I am extremely impressed by what he's been able to do this season. 69.2 completion percentage, 4,544 yards, 37 touchdowns through the air compared to just 10 interceptions, and also proving he is a threat with his legs, averaging 4.1 yards per carry, 421 yards, and 8 touchdowns on the ground. So, Joe, when you look at Josh Allen and how he has evolved from 2019 to 2020, how has he been able to do it, and how much has the addition of Stephon Diggs helped him in Buffalo?
Josh has worked extremely hard. It's been very incremental. I know it feels like he exploded this year, but the young man's done nothing but grow since he entered the NFL. You know, you think about where he was at Wyoming, the player we saw as a rookie, the player we saw year two, and now the player we're seeing in year three. He's taken steps every single year, and I think he's kind of reaching his ceiling right now. Obviously, he's extremely gifted physically with his size and athleticism and his arm talent. You know, those traits allow him to break the rules when it comes to what you can and cannot get away with at quarterback. And so he's become very good off script. He's become very good throwing the football down the field, which is very different than what we said about him last year. He's become more accurate. He's become a better decision maker, and he's really just kind of put it all together. And like you mentioned there, he's playing at an MVP level. You mentioned Aaron Rodgers, him, Patrick Mahomes, and Josh Allen. That's kind of your finalist. If you had three guys at the table for MVP this year, I think those are going to be the three players in terms of at least betonline.ag. They have those three as the highest odds to be the NFL MVP. So Josh has worked really hard. I mean, he's applied himself in the offseason with his personal quarterbacks coach, Jordan Palmer. And then obviously you have to give a lot of credit to the organization for what they've been doing to build around him. He's had consistency with Brian Daboll as the offensive coordinator for three seasons now. And obviously the addition of Stephon Diggs, the wide receiver core really took a jump in 2019, bringing in John Brown and Cole Beasley, but the missing link was really that true number one. And that's Stephon Diggs, who led the NFL in receptions and yards this season. And, you know, what his presence has enabled this offense to do is run more 10 personnel, four wide receivers on the field. And, you know, you think about four dynamic separators in, you know, Diggs, Brown, Beasley, and then if they want to put Isaiah McKenzie or Gabriel Davis on the field as that fourth receiver, plus Josh Allen's arm talent, it's just a nightmare spacing-wise for these opposing defenses. And so really anxious to see how this version of the Bills offense looks against, you know, an outstanding Baltimore defense that has, you know, all the personnel in the world needed to kind of match up. But, you know, obviously a unique offense in what the Bills do. I know the Ravens have a unique offense of their own, but obviously the Bills are unique in the way that they pass the football, whereas, you know, the Ravens are more unique in the ways that they run the football. So you have a really interesting contrast of styles and obviously a great Baltimore defense. And so we'll see. You know, I think this is a really different offense than the one that kind of kept it close last year against Baltimore, but couldn't score enough points to win. It's going to be fun to see how these two teams match up. And I think obviously Josh Allen from the Bills side of things is that X factor and the guy that can, you know, make up that difference or not. And really, you know, if he doesn't play well, then I don't think this matchup's going to go well.
Right. And I think the key matchup when you look at everything put together in one is going to be the Lamar Jackson versus Josh Allen matchup. Who can pick apart the defense first? Who can make bigger plays happen? This, that, and the other. Because these two quarterbacks are so talented, sometimes the offenses, you know, whether Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen is on or off in a game can determine the outcome, whether that team wins or loses. But Joe, we did talk about the Ravens rushing offense. I want to get into the Bills rushing offense a bit. The Bills are going to be most likely missing one of the key pieces to their rushing attack in Zach Moss. In 13 games, Moss averaged 4.3 yards per carry, 481 yards, and 4 touchdowns on the ground. Now, the Bills' rushing offense, it's been all right this season. You know, the Ravens' offense is just historic in that regard. But again, I mentioned one of the keys to this game, I think, is being able to make the Bills' offense one-dimensional. And part of doing that is shutting down the Bills' rushing attack. So, Joe, how big of a loss would Zach Moss be for this Bills offense, and how would Buffalo kind of mask his absence?
I want to be respectable to Zach Moss because it's disappointing that his injury is going to keep him out of this game and the rest of the playoffs. And you know, obviously he's a rookie and a young player that had some injury concerns entering the NFL. But I think I can honestly say that I've been mostly disappointed with Zach Moss this year. And let's start off by establishing this. The Bills are a pass first offense. They're one of the most pass aggressive teams in the NFL. They pass the football literally 200 times more than they ran it this year. This team is, you know, you talk about neutral game scripts, the Bills throw the football. And so when you talk about making the Bills one-dimensional, you would want them to be one-dimensional in terms of taking away the throwing and make them run it, because they haven't been a good rush offense this season. And obviously they're without Zach Moss, who, you know, Devin Singletary is still the starting running back. And I thought Devin Singletary had one of his better games last year against Baltimore in terms of him running the football and catching it. And so, you know, I think on one hand, it takes some of the stress out of the Bills from having to think about getting Zach Moss involved in this game plan, because the best thing that the Bills do is pass the football. And, you know, you got to have some threat of running it. But, you know, for the Bills, a lot of times running the ball is just not very effective. And the opportunity cost is that if you run the football, that means that Josh Allen's not throwing it. And that's the best thing that you do. So, you know, I'm worried about the potential snow in this game and how that could affect the Bills' passing offense, because if there is elements and play here, you know, I think that is definitely an advantage for Baltimore in terms of what it would mean to slowing down the Bills' passing offense and kind of forcing them to lean on the rushing attack. And again, the Bills' rushing attack hasn't been that great this year. And I mean, Baltimore is unbelievable against the run. You mentioned what they were able to do against Derrick Henry last week. And I mean, you're talking about Brandon Williams and Calais Campbell and Derek Wolfe and Justin Ellis. Let's not sleep on him. Pernell McPhee's a good run, you know, edge setter. They got dudes, man, on that defense. So I think for the Bills, the best thing they can do is sprinkle in the run, but really lean on the arm of Josh Allen if they're going to have success against Baltimore.
Right. It's all a balance of how often do you want to take the ball out of your best playmaker's hands. For the Bills, that's Josh Allen. For the Ravens, that's Lamar Jackson. So how often do you want to potentially risk not getting a chunk play or a big gain because you're trying to get someone else involved in the offense? So with Zach Moss, who you mentioned you've been decently disappointed with, I think it might be a technical advantage to Buffalo, but again, having running back depth doesn't hurt, especially, you know, with Baltimore and how they are four deep at the running back position at the moment. But Joe, switching over to the defensive side of the football, this defense has certainly some playmakers on it. with Jordan Poyer and Tremaine Edmonds leading the way in tackles with 124 and 119 respectively. I mentioned Micah Hyde. You can't not talk about Tre'Davious White, the all-pro corner. There's Ed Oliver and Matt Milano. I could go up and down the list all day. Joe, how has this Bills defense performed, even with the loss of a couple of guys, big names, including star Lutulele, who has not been available for the Bills this season? How have they performed, and how do you expect them to match up with the Ravens?
Well, the Bills were a top five defense in 2018 and 2019. They're not as good as they were the last two seasons. I think part of that is impacted by a very slow start for this team on defense early in the season. You know, you mentioned star Lutulele, you know, Lorenzo Alexander retired. Kevin Johnson's not here anymore. Shaq Lawson and Jordan Phillips, the guys that they let walk in free agency. So there was quite a bit of turnover on the defense, particularly on the defensive line, where the rotation is really, really different from what it was last year. And I think it took the Bills some time to figure out the right groupings and combinations that they like up front. And then they had injuries at on the second level. I mean, Tremaine Edmonds battled a shoulder injury for the first several weeks of the season. You could tell he wasn't right, but he tried to gut it out, and he was not as effective as he was last year, but obviously he's healthy. He's playing well. Matt Milano, a really key player for the Bills defense at linebacker. He was injured early in the season, and, you know, he really just kind of got to the point over the last few weeks where he's able to play 100% of the snaps again. So him getting healthy has been a big boost for the unit. And then, you know, opposite of Trey White has been Levi Wallace, Josh Norman. Those guys have both missed time with injuries as well early in the season. So as the season has went along, the unit has reminded us of what it's capable of, you know, kind of reminiscent of 2018 and 2019. But early on, you know, they really struggled. So I guess the positive there is that they wound up peaking and playing their best football when it's most important late in the season. But there's no mistake about it. Early in this year, this unit struggled, and there was a lot of concerns, but it came around. But still, I don't think it's quite to the caliber we saw over the last couple of years.
It was great talking to Joe, hearing his perspective on the Bills and giving him my perspective on the Ravens for this big divisional round matchup between the two teams. But that's all that I have for you today here on Locked On Ravens. When we get back here tomorrow, it's more Ravens talk from us, getting into our full game preview of the Ravens at Bills divisional round matchup. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.